RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 80 with guest Itzik Ben-Gen. Recorded Thursday, October 16th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, what's happening today?
We're coming into that crazy time now, the serious conference run, PDC, TechEd Barcelona, Dev Connections. It's just nonstop.
I won't be at PDC. That's the developer side of things. It's a little more your ball of wax, but I will be joining you both in Barcelona, and of course, we'll also be together in Vegas at the Connections Conference.
Yeah, the Connections, we've put together a Run As Radio panel with an interview on stage with the notorious Mark Manassi.
Excellent.
That should be off the hook.
Yeah, our last conversation with Mark was a lot of fun, so it'll be good to do that in person. So we'll actually be in a room there, in a room at the conference center and doing it live.
That's right. We're on stage, so the audience can participate. I've got mics on the floor, so we can ask. They can ask Mark questions too, and we'll see where it goes.
That's great. So if you're at Dev Connections in Las Vegas, I believe that's the second week of November, coming up pretty soon. Be sure to check us out and come on in. And of course, also if you're in Barcelona and you're going to be at the TechEd EMEA IT Week, then we'll be there for that as well.
And don't forget to play the Barcelona sweepstakes, just about the last week of the Barcelona sweepstakes now.
That's
right. You can win a free trip to TechEd Barcelona. And if you can't go this year, you can always go next year, which is not going to be in Barcelona, but it'll be somewhere in Europe. I believe Berlin.
That's what I've been hearing.
So you have a choice. So that's over at .netrocks.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest here. Itzik Ben-Gen is a mentor and co-founder at Solid Quality Mentors, a SQL Server Microsoft MVP since 1999. Itzik has been delivering numerous training events around the world focusing on T-SQL querying, query tuning, and programming. Itzik is the author of, all the best books, Microsoft SQL Server 2008 T-SQL Fundamentals, Inside Microsoft SQL Server 2005 T-SQL Querying, Inside SQL Server 2005 T-SQL Programming, and co-authored Advanced Transact SQL for SQL Server 2000, and has written many articles for SQL Server Magazine, as well as articles and white papers for MSDN. Itzik's been speaking at TechEd, Dev Week, PASS, the SQL Server Magazine Connections, various user groups around the world, and, of course, the Solid Quality Mentors events, just to name a few. You know him. You love him. He's the best. Itzik, it's great to talk to you.
Hi there. Great to be here.
And thanks so much for coming on the show. You and I bump into each other every so often at conferences, and we usually end up talking T-SQL because it's one of my favorite subjects, too. And you're in London right now? Are you teaching?
Yep. I'm in London. Just finished a round in the U.S. For a few weeks. Now I'm doing a few weeks in London. So, usually I find myself outside of my home most of the year, but at least I get to do what I like.
Yeah, and I imagine, just like me, you love to travel, so this is all part of the adventure, right?
Actually, I don't like the traveling part because, you don't get to see too many places while walking.
Exactly.
Especially now that I'm working on writing, several books, so I get to walk during the day with a customer, and then in the evenings I get to write. So you don't see a lot of the surrounding.
Yeah, you're very familiar with hotel rooms.
Yes, definitely. this I see a lot.
Oh, man. How is the reception for 2008?
It's new, and still I think for many customers, they're waiting. Typically, customers tend to wait for Service Spec 1 and so on. But, what you get the feel from people when you talk in conferences and so on and presenting new features is some of the new features are very interesting, especially for audiences where there's some special features that are applicable to their environments. Like, in the case of T-SQL, let's say, things like the merge statement or grouping sets that are very interesting for people that deal with data warehouses or those that deal with the spatial data. Now there's some new enhancements related to spatial data. So there's some interest, of course, in those areas, but it will be time that will tell, of course, how the adoption will be.
Yeah, I'm concerned. It's not that 2008 is bad. 2005 was a great version.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it doesn't strike me that, except for these odd things, there's a lot of features that are really compelling to jump to. I mean, if you need some of the new indexing features or you need to deal with spatial data, yeah, 2008 is pretty compelling for you. But I don't think that's the majority of the market.
Yeah, well, yeah, as I said, these are special markets. And those that have specialized applications that will typically be interested in those things. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the different enhancements, they do accumulate. I mean, still some, I think, key features are missing in the product. But if you look at the whole set of enhancements, especially in the area that I'm interested in T-SQL, they get to quite a few of them. So, you know, take, for example, you know, table valued parameters. So this is something that solves quite an important need for many applications. The ability to pass a table valued parameter instead of, you know, all the, those tricks that people use, like lists, comma separated lists of values or XML or whatever.
Right.
And now it is so elegant and so clean and efficient. So, yeah, maybe some of those things that might seem small as a technical feature, but they can mean a lot to the application. If you combine several of those features, it might be worthwhile. But, yeah, as you say, it's not necessarily as big as the move was for 2005 from 2000. It's not such a major release.
It's a quite a painless upgrade then?
Hopefully. I mean, because the engine is still the 2005 core,
right?
Then I would expect this to be kind of smooth upgrade, yeah.
So any particular favorites? I mean, I know you like the table parameter. I think that's absolutely huge. I can really agree with you. Any other favorite T-SQL additions?
Well, I have to say, before I'm talking about my favorite, I have to say that my real favorite feature in SQL is still not in T-SQL.
Still?
And yeah. So those that know me know that I feel very strongly about the overclose, because I really feel that the standard SQL overclose is probably the most profound language element that exists in ANSI SQL. It kind of bridges the deep gap that exists between the set world and the cursor world. You know, our minds are kind of suited to think in terms of individual records and processing data in order, while the set is all about thinking of the set as a whole and not being able to rely on order of data.
Right.
And people, you know, feel more comfortable in many cases working with cursors because they're able to think of individual records and they're able to express things in order, while the model wants them to think differently. And, you know, ANSI SQL came up with this concept of being able to phrase calculations that, on one hand, allow you to phrase the calculation based on some logical ordering without contradicting the concept of a set. So it's not that we force ordering the data necessarily, rather it's ordering that is logical ordering for the sake of the calculation. The result, the source of the activity is still a set, the result is still a set. It's quite ingenious concept. So they added it in 2005 along with the ranking calculations and with partial support for, you know, aggregate functions. But some key elements of this overclose are still missing. And for some reason, they kind of forgot about it in 2008. But we're doing a lot of lobbying. So we already got promises that this will get high priority in the SQL 11. So I had to get this off my chest because
absolutely.
I can't say I have a couple of most you know, favorite features without talking about the one that I think should have been there.
And so for those who aren't real familiar with an overclause, this is
right.
Really part of an aggregate function in a select statement.
Yeah, so that's just one of the uses.
Right.
So the overclause, you should think of it as a concept. It's not necessarily tied specifically to aggregates or any other specific type of calculation. It's a concept. It's a concept that allows you to apply the calculation first over a whole window of rows. I mean, if you think about it in the SQL, traditionally, calculations are kind of bound to the current row. You can apply expressions between elements from within the current row, but in order to somehow access a whole set of rows, you need to use a subquery or something like this. You know, if you want to combine a current element from the row and the operation on a whole set. So, for example, if you want to calculate the percentage of a certain quantity out of the grand total, you need to use a subquery. right?
Right.
So you refer to the quantity and then divide by the result of the total against the subquery. Well, this over clause now allows you to say, I want to apply the calculation over a whole window of rows. So in the context of aggregates, for example, this would allow you to say quantity divided by sum of quantity over, and now define the window of rows that you want to apply the aggregate to. It doesn't have to be in the context of a group by, right?
Right.
And so that's one concept or one aspect of the over clause. And then another very key point of the over clause is the ability to define logical ordering within that window. So take, for example, a row number. Within the window of rows, I'm assigning a row number over order by, say, a date or a value or quantity.
Right.
So based on this logical ordering, we're assigning those row numbers within the window of rows. Or in respect to aggregates, the parts that are currently missing, being able to define logical ordering within the window and then saying, I need to apply this aggregate in a certain range of rows within that window based on this logical ordering. So imagine being able to define running aggregates in a more intuitive way. And also, this is kind of lends itself to very good optimization because having an index in place on the right columns, it's natural to expect the optimizer to do this in a single pass, you know, over the data.
Yeah, and that's generally where we find trouble with these subqueries as part of an expression for a select clause. They're just not efficient. And that over clause, this seems like a much more sensible way to do it. You're going to get better performance.
Right. So, the thing is that it's not the subquery exactly that needs to be blamed. It's more the way the engine treats it.
Right.
I totally for example, agree. If I need to calculate the running aggregate and I'll use a subquery for this purpose, then for the first, period, it would scan one row in the index. For the second period, instead of just adding a value to the first period, it would go and rescan the first and second. And then for the third, it would scan the first, second, and third. You get an arithmetic sequence and the complexity is n square. So it's just the way the optimizer handles it. Instead of realizing it could do a single pass and keep adding, it doesn't. That's a fact. So we could argue, how come the subquery is optimized the way it is? But that's a fact of life.
Yeah.
And then you look at the way the overclose is optimized. It is more natural for the optimizer, let's say, to figure out we can do this in a single pass and we don't need to rescan the data again and again.
So what are we missing from the over clause in the current implementation that would make it more powerful that you're
right.
really after?
Right. So, for example, for the four ranking calculations that we got, we have a full implementation. But this is not the complete set of ranking calculations.
Right.
But more importantly, for aggregates, currently the implementation that we have is only the ability to define the window with the over clause, the ability to define partitions
right.
within the window with the partition by. But the more kind of crucial thing, which is what I was talking about, is the ability to define logical order within the window with an order by clause, like with the ranking calculations. And then based on this logical ordering, being able to define rows, kind of a range of rows. This is a clause called rows. So imagine, for example, I want a running total aggregate for each employee in month. Being able to say some quantity over partitioned by employee, because we want to do this for each employee separately. This is the part that we have.
Yeah.
But now order by month, meaning ordering based on month. And then based on this logical ordering, I'll say, what is the range of rows I'm after? So you would say rows between unbounded preceding and current row, meaning that I want to aggregate everything with no low boundary point up until the current month. Or being able to say rows between two preceding and current row, meaning we're operating on the last 3 months.
So this would literally allow us to have that sliding window of the,
exactly.
Just a quarter based on the current on a given date. It's
right,
a very clever idea. And of course, I can think of a way through doing this,
mm-hmm.
but it would, I'd probably recruit a temporary table, break into multiple expressions. You're talking about being able to express this in a single statement.
Yeah. So, the point is that you will be able to express it in the way that is more intuitive for your the way you think. So on one hand, it will be more intuitive because that's how we think about the data. We think of it in certain order, typically, even though it's not the way the model wants us to think.
Right.
And we want to think of aggregating a certain range of rows in the data. And not only that it is more intuitive for us to express things, it is more intuitive for the optimizer to optimize well. So this kind of both sides, both the logical side and the performance side, are handled well. And this is just one example, aggregates, another example, ranking calculations. But the same concept, if you think about it, could be applied to, let's say, an option such as top. Now, when we say top, we rely on the very same order by clause that is traditionally used for presentation purposes. And there's a lot of confusion surrounding this fact because we can't, for example, say that we want to choose the three rows with the highest quantities and sort them in a different way for presentation purposes. You right. see, because the two order by concepts are merged into one order by clause, and they should have been separated. The top should have had its own logical order by the defines for it, which rows to choose, and it shouldn't be related necessarily to the normal presentation order by. Not to speak of the fact that when a query has a presentation order by, it doesn't return a relational result. It returns what ANSI calls a cursor, because once you force order in the data, it's not a set anymore.
Right.
So there's a lot of confusion, and you know the fact that people use this top with order by in views, assuming that they will get back the data in certain order, there's lots of trouble due to this design. So imagine they use the over clause with this top option. We could say top over, first of all, you would be able to say partition by if you want to do this per each partition. But that aside, being able to say I want to choose the three rows with the highest quantities without having any contradiction or conflict with the presentation order by. So the query could return a valid set, while if we want to return something with presentation ordering, it doesn't have to be the same as the one that we use for top. So same concept just works for many different, you know, language elements. So this is the part that I'm really looking forward and hoping that we would have in SQL 11, but this kind of seems like being considered very seriously for the next version. For That's... now, my two favorite features, I would say, are the grouping sets. It's not really the grouping set feature because the grouping set is just a concept, but there's a whole bunch of new features that are related to the concept of grouping sets that will be, I'm sure, very useful for BI folks. And then another one is the merge statement is also very kind of powerful.
I'm a fan of the merge statement. I like it a lot. Where are you seeing it used?
Well, I can see it used in both OLTP environments and in the, you know, data warehouse environments. In the OLTP scenario, you know, sometimes you get the data that you need to, enter into the system from external sources. So think about those cases where we get some flat file from a third party with recent customer information, and we need to merge the contents. So those customers that exist, we need to update their attributes. Those that don't exist, we need to add the new rows and sometimes even more sophisticated logic. That's one scenario. This is the OLTP one.
Right.
A data warehouse scenario. Think about things like slowly changing dimensions and so on, where we need to accommodate the updates and reflect those in our data warehouse. So this is another common area where I can see it being used. Also, think about storing aggregates in the data warehouse. Something similar to the way we handle cubes in analysis services, where you have a full processing and then every day, let's say, incremental update of the cube. If you store your aggregates in the relational data warehouse, then you can use the merge statement to do the processes of incremental updates.
And yeah, an merge statement is just so much of a cleaner, rather than writing that stored procedure that says, check to see if the row exists. If the row exists, is it different? Okay, it's, you know, let's update it. Otherwise, insert it. Just getting that all into a single statement.
Yes, definitely. It's cleaner, and also it's a single unit of work, you know. And you don't access the data twice. I mean, if you look at the way it's optimized, at first it will access the data only once, and it's pretty much optimized like a join.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's also the performance side of things. It's an atomic unit of work. It's the performance. It's a single statement. It's standard. You know, there's many nice sides to this merge statement.
Well, absolutely. And it'd be interesting to get some benchmarks on this to see, is this really faster? I mean, it seems
definitely.
Intuitively that it would be, but I don't know what the numbers are like.
Yes, definitely.
So, working on another book?
First, I just finished the Fundamentals book for 2008.
Oh, great.
And I'm working now. You caught me in the middle of chapter 4 of the 2008 version of the T-SQL querying book. And when I'll be done, I'll still have the T-SQL programming volume. So,
oh, man.
I'm looking forward to be same point in time next year, I can tell you.
Because at least we get a couple of years between versions of SQL Server, so you could get some breathing room.
Sometimes they don't realize. They are talking about, you know, shortening the periods between releases, and they're talking about moving to 18-month or 2-year or 3-year cycle. And, you know, people that write books and want to cover those areas don't have enough time to kind of breathe in between versions. So also think of us. That's what I'm saying.
Some of those books are very big books. Do we have enough trees to cover that kind of life cycle? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm all in favor of electronic ones. But, you know, they kept saying that the computing was supposed to reduce the amount of paper, but apparently it's not the case.
It's not working that way.
Yeah.
Also, I think that, I mean, we're talking about SQL Server here. This is not just something you update on a whim. I just, even at a rate of every 3 years, I think we're seeing resistance from IT groups to actually upgrade the product.
Right.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's one question. Is going from 2000 or 2005 to SQL 2008, is that something that, has Microsoft done anything in your experience to try to make that a better story?
Yeah, so the way they try to kind of improve this process is, first of all, in the development cycle itself, they're much more serious about adding new features. So instead of adding features that are not complete and, you know, letting people, you know, external people to play with them a lot and suffer from all those bugs and then making changes, they change the approach to only including features in those builds that are complete. So you get much more stable features than compared to what happened prior to the 2008 release. So this hopefully should reflect on the final product, that the things that are not kind of complete and in a very stable state are not even entered into the product to begin with. So it might mean fewer features, I guess, but then those that make it are supposed to be more stable. Hopefully that's one of those things.
Well, in a world where the data is the gold, I guess, you know, that's the one thing you want to really feel is rock solid, that you can really rely upon, is your database.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I guess that most, you know, customers tend to wait until Service Pack 1 before they actually make the move, kind of.
I
would be very happy with the 5-year release, but that's for my kind of selfish objective reasons.
And, of course, that's the natural cynicism of IT folks, to wait for the service pack. Although, honestly, I've really never been badly burned by SQL Server. I have a lot of respect for that team. They build a great product.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I've almost never, this is our IT confessions time, I've almost never waited for a service pack before. But people tell me, so, you know, you're awfully bleeding edge when you take on these things, but I've only been burned by that, like really burned by that, I think once.
For example, I remember some very amazing bug that was in SQL Server 2000 RTM. I don't know if people are aware of it, but you know that in 2000 they introduced the descending indexes.
Yeah.
So if you have a descending index, let's say a descending clustered index, where it's very likely to be used when you do something like delete from table where column is greater than something. Do you know what ends up being deleted?
What's that?
Let's say you do delete from table where column is greater than 50. What ends up being deleted is whatever is smaller than 50.
Right.
So that's quite a big bug, and that's the release. This was obviously fixed in Service Pack 1. But yeah, occasionally you see those kind of big ones, but... Yeah, I agree that the products tend to now get released quite stable.
Well, at least on the... I don't want to talk about all of Microsoft products, but at least I get that sense from these very much infrastructure-oriented products, like server editions of operating systems, and I'm specific about that, and the major server products like SQL and so on. I was just going to stick with the SQL. My SQL experience from 7 on has been a pretty pleasant one. I mean, the product has been extraordinary for years.
Yes, definitely. I agree.
Yeah, I think if you look, like, you know, you look at Exchange, for example, from 2003 on, I think that's been true. And even 2000, certainly before that, I don't know that I would make that statement, but you're right, over time the process has changed.
We've talked a little bit about the book. What sort of stuff are you teaching these days? Are you teaching specifically SQL 2008?
No. So nowadays, because still there are many systems running 2000 and many of them already have a mix kind of 2000, 2005. Majority is 2000 and 2005 content. Already several rounds of 2008 that I started teaching, but this is something that will naturally gradually increase. But now I guess maybe 20% of my teaching is 2008. But what I do usually in the courses that I develop is I usually do a mix of content of the last two versions. So, for example, the 2008 version of the courses, I covered the 2005 and 2008,
right,
realizing that many people will still work with 2005 for still several good years. And people usually are interested, even if they are currently working with 2005 and are not yet planned to migrate to 2008 anywhere near in the future, they still are interested to know what's available there. So mostly I would say today either a mix of the 2000, 2005 or a mix of the 2005 and 2008. But it's mainly focused on T-SQL and query tuning, what my focus is.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly you're well known as the T-SQL guru. When you talk about query tuning, can you give us an overview? What's the general approach you take to query tuning?
Right. So first of all, the most important thing is to realize that query tuning doesn't have all those rules of thumb as people would like to see. So many people like to get recommendations like always use joins because they are faster than subqueries, and the reality is different. So first I try to explain that this is a very kind of a sophisticated dynamic process of optimization, and people should try to get rid of rules of thumb and get a better familiarity with the way the optimizer works.
Right.
So, of course, you kind of develop intuition about what things tend to get certain type of optimization and what things the optimizer is or is not capable of, but to be very careful from those rules of thumb. So we talk a lot about, of course, the index design, but then realizing that given a certain query and providing it with good indexes doesn't necessarily mean that this is the optimal solution. If you write two versions of a query and both of them do the same thing logically, you won't necessarily get the same optimization for both because the optimizer restricts itself in terms of how long to spend on optimization,
right,
and so on. So we talk both about index design and about the query tuning, differences between using cursors versus using set-based approaches, understanding what are the circumstances where cursors still make sense even though the model doesn't want us to use cursors, you know, rather to think in terms of sets. There's still occasionally cases where cursors cannot be beaten, let's say. Not the majority of the problems, but there are cases. The problem is that most people, most cursor code that you see out there in production is not those kind of areas where simply the way the optimizer works, the set-based solution cannot outperform the cursor, rather because of misunderstanding of the way to think in terms of sets. But still, once you get this understanding, there's still occasionally the minority cases where cursors do make sense.
Yes.
So, yeah, all those kinds of things is the things that we usually talk about.
What do you cite as your minority cases where cursors are winning out performance-wise?
Yeah, so take you remember what we started with?
Yes.
You know, the discussion about the overclose. So before we get the full implementation of the overclose, today the way you handle, a running aggregate is either with a subquery or with a join. Either way, you know, you're going to get n square complexity because, for each row, you're going to scan in an index all rows up to that point.
Right.
Right. So for the first, you scan one. For the second, you scan two. For the third, you scan three and so on, instead of doing one scan. Now, that's the fact of life, the way the optimizer works. It doesn't realize. It's not coded to realize that it can do a single ordered scan of the index and keep aggregating. So, again, it's not a matter of blaming the set-based solution. The set-based solution is quite simple to write. It's the way the optimizer processes the set-based solution. So here, if you write a cursor solution, then it's true that you will pay more for each row that you access because there's some extra overhead in each row manipulation with the cursor. But then again, you can consume cursor rows in order. So you can sort, you know, by the temporal sequence column, and then simply do a single scan over the data and keep doing the running aggregate. So there will be a single pass in order to calculate the running aggregate with the cursor, versus N square complexity with the set-based solution.
Right.
So I'm afraid that nowadays you cannot, I mean, if you're looking at a very small partition of rows, then the set-based solution, even though it's N square, is still going to be faster than the cursor. But beyond several dozens of rows per partitions, like per employee, the cursor outperforms the set by far, you know. Actually, it's more common to see, as I said, code where people just not well versed with SQL or don't have the right understanding to tune it well. So this is the majority that you see today. But suppose you do have the right understanding of optimization and set-based querying and so on. Yeah, you will stumble into some of those cases. And as you said, yes, it's not the majority.
Yeah. And I do find that folks, well, often the folks that are writing the T-SQL are really developers and they think iteratively. And so cursors are far more natural to them than set-based thinking.
Yes, that's right. And this is why I said the overclose, I think, is so important. I think it will take a bit for people to get used to it because this everything new, it takes a bit of getting used to. But once you do, you realize that's exactly the way most of us think.
Right. The natural way to think is sets. It's unnatural to think iteratively. That's what you learn as a developer.
Yeah, but could, you know, as a developer with lots of years of experience, perhaps, I mean, what matters is ultimately the way you currently think.
Right.
And the fact is most think iteratively and most think in terms of order and most think in terms of one row at a time. So, yes, we do need to go over the phase of being able to think of a set as a whole.
Right.
But the ordering part is very hard to get over. And this is why it's so nice to have this option with the overclose.
Yes, ordering is back.
Ordering is what?
I'm just thinking about the old days of database development where order was much more available. And then it sort of went away as we get into the more sophisticated databases. And now it's like ordering is back, that we have a lot more features to get
yes,
the order.
Yes. I see what you mean. Yes, definitely. Yes, but the ingenious part of this design of this overclose is they managed to edit this ordering concept without breaking the concept of sets that have no order. You see, the source of the data we query and the target remain sets. It's just the logical ordering for the calculation or the operation. I think this is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like we're just about out of time. Any final words?
I don't know.
let's send them to your blog.
The question is not about SQL. You got me here.
Well, let's just send them to your blog. Where do we find it?
Right. So the blog is sqlmag.com. That's where I maintain the blog and also have a column. And they can also look up our company's activities in the solidq.com.
Right.
They can see our course schedule and our mentoring activities. And also, if they look for information about my book, then in insidetsql.com, they will find all the information and also some links to resources and so on.
Itzik, time just flew by. Really enjoyed talking to you about some of the new T-SQL features. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Itzik.
Bye-bye.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.